Tracy Worcester from Do Business. I just wanted to ask a question. Is Castro, or whoever's in power now, giving the land to your movement to make into agroecology, like you were saying? Because when I was there, the likes of you working on this were saying that Castro was holding on to the land because it was his way of holding on to power.
Okay, if you can hold that just till the end, is that okay? Yes?
Just thank you so much, everyone, for those presentations. Michelle Springfield from Royal Holloway. The presentation from Hugo was absolutely fascinating, and it struck me that perhaps the obstacles to food sovereignty that have that were discussed, the obstacles that have been experienced in Kenya, are somehow fundamentally different, perhaps, the ones that will be experienced, Cuba, will be experienced in Kenya. And I'm thinking specifically about land rights, land ownership, and the fundamentally different approach I believe the government has in Kenya to the issue of land tenure. So if Mary, Helen had time, perhaps, what she sees as the biggest obstacle, perhaps, to food sovereignty in Kenya.
Thank you for the wonderful lecture. My name is Philip, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Warwick. My question is, what do you think about fair trade and other labeling initiatives? Can they help in achieving food sovereignty?
I really want to thank all the speakers for being really inspiring. And in the message I take from that is that like small is successful and small is ecological. So my question, like to all of us here, really is, how do we translate that approach to this country? So how do we learn from Brazil about, yeah, how do we get people onto the land? How do we learn from Sri Lanka about agroecological practices? From Cuba about motivating farmers? Yeah, so how can we actually bring that learning over here? Because in a way, we are the developing country in this field.
Hello, my name is Fan. I'm a first year PhD student at the University of Warwick. And I actually come from Thailand. And I'm very interested in what you have said in today, because a lot of the situations is very, very similar to Thailand. But the problem is that although in Thailand we have a few progressive cooperatives and farmers movement, but I think that the majority of the farmers in Thailand, they're still, maybe they're under this cultural mindset that, you know, they like to look up to the authorities, like the government, to help them. And the government sort of like, you know, just use populist policies to sort of control them and preventing them from actually like forming their own movement. And it's just very difficult to politicize them. Sometimes you try to politicize them and then the government declares that, okay, we're going to give you debt moratorium for 3 years, or we're just going to like give you more loans so that, you know, you can buy seeds from agri businesses and so on. So I'm wondering whether you have encountered these problems in your country, and how do you solve it? Thank you.
My name is Christine Haig. I'm from the World Development Movement. And we're working to tackle food speculation in the UK. I'm not going to hog the floor to talk about that. But I just wanted to ask the panel, what, as campaigners, what policies or practices in the UK would you particularly say that we need to be changing to help achieve food sovereignty? I'm sure there are lots, but maybe you can mention one or two good places to start. And also, while I've got the opportunity, I'd also like to say we're very privileged to be being joined by Sarah and Delwick tomorrow at another food sovereignty event in Manchester. So if you've enjoyed tonight and you've got friends or relatives in Manchester who'd be interested in coming along, you might want to tell them about it. All the details are on our website, which is the link to the all.
Just a quick question. I'm with a cooperative of small scale farmers in this country. And we'd quite like to connect with cooperatives in other countries, in your countries possibly, to directly support any campaigns you might be doing in whatever ways we can. And if there's a mechanism for that that you know of, where we can really get in contact if you've got a little campaign going on in Sri Lanka or Kenya, and we have a way of supporting it by emails or whatever, or sending anything you might need, is there a way we can connect in and help get each other out on the grassroots level?
I'm from Big Business. We're filming foreign corporations building intensive pig farms in other countries, and we wondered whether any of the panel had experience of, in their countries, of foreign corporations building intensive pig farms, undercutting local livelihoods, polluting the environment, overusing antibiotics, and abusing the animals.
Katie Davidson from the Youth Food Movement. I'll keep it brief. We've talked about agroecology and the Common Agricultural Policy and all of these things. There's something that I think is linked, and there's a bit of an omission on this, I understand from what we discussed, and that's the fact we're on an island surrounded by ocean, and we have the Common Fisheries Policy going through reform at the moment as well. And I wonder how that fits into food sovereignty when, you know, the focus has been agroecology, not aqua. Ecology, because obviously that's really relevant as well.
I'm Jocelyn Jones from World Family, and just to thank everybody for an amazing assistance in developing a food sovereignty movement in the UK. We also have an event on Thursday in Brighton on the south coast, so taking a tip from WDM, it would be great if anybody knows people in that area who would like to come tell us.
Thank you very much for your comments and questions. I'd like to be very specific in answering the land tenure system in Kenya. As I mentioned earlier on, is that the general land allocation in Kenya is in three parts. There's individual land, which you own as an individual and you have a title deed, and you have all the powers to use it the way you want to use it, like even subdividing it to your own children. We have communal land in Kenya, which is owned by the communities, and this is mainly in the semi-arid, arid land, which is owned by many people, like even ranches. And then we have public land, which is owned by the government. And the communal land, there's a danger that through the community, land can be taken by the government to use it for whatever interest that they have, and they push people away. Just the same way they would want to use their public land for building schools, building institutions, and that kind of thing. I hope I have answered. For fair trade, somebody asked about fair trade. Would it help to enhance food sovereignty? Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that fair trade, unlike free trade, has some social components in it, which encourages the producers. For example, the tea producers in our country who are engaged in fair trade, they are encouraged by the buyers of fair trade tea to build their food sufficiency at household level, and not only engage on cash crops that they are trading with them. No, because the interests of fair trade is only for the export products, and they are not going to follow you up to see whether you have food sufficiency or no, but it's there in the social setup of the rules. Thank you.
Jesus Christ preached good news to the poor. Good news to the poor was bad news to the rich. Therefore, they kill him. I think this is very important. This message is to the people who cannot fit into and survive within the existing system. That has to be very clear. All the others, even in our own discussions, we try to fit this into a system where we can fit in. Therefore, we fail. Therefore, we work, make things very complicated, and we discuss and discuss and discuss. his experience in Sri Lanka, his experience all over the world. Therefore, it's very easy and simple. You just preach the good news to the poor that they can survive if they allow nature to help them to survive. If they don't have capital, learn to live without capital. Can people live without capital? I say yes. If you allow nature to help you, humankind has survived out of the 250,000 years or so. There was no agriculture in the world for more than 10,000 years. 240,000 years, people didn't do any agriculture. They just collected from nature what was given to them. Now this message would be picked up very confidently and strongly by the poor. We heard about Cuban experiences. To come and dump chemical inputs, fertilizers, pesticides and so on, with the wrong message that you can do better agriculture with those. You have to tell them that that's not agriculture at all. So you allow the poor people to take over, the discarded people, the excluded people can create a new world. Therefore, they will also have the good news that they can save the world. They can save the rest of the world and they become the saviors. This message has to be given to them. It can be very, very easily demonstrated, and when people do it and experience it, they don't give it up. So this is the final thing that I want to say, and that's the only way the world can be saved. Thank you. Please help us. We have been depending on a lot on foreign funding, and now the funds are depleting. Right at the time when we require to do the maximum, we are in a crisis because depletion of foreign funds. Therefore, we thought we would appeal to the general public in Sri Lanka, in all countries, to help us. That's the additional message, but I don't know, somehow, can share this. Thank you.
Minhas considerações finais. Eu gostaria de informá-los de que a reforma agrária não está acontecendo no Brasil.
I would like to inform you that unfortunately the agrarian reform is not currently being held in Brazil.
Ou seja, frustrando as nossas expectativas, o atual governo optou em manter o mesmo projeto para o desenvolvimento da agricultura brasileira.
Even though it frustrates us, the current government has decided to keep the project in the same position that the government before had concerning agrarian reform.
Portanto, a luta pela reforma agrária continua.
Therefore, the fight for agrarian reform in Brazil continues.
Nós acreditamos que a mudança virá da tomada de consciência de toda a sociedade.
We believe that this change is going to come from the society rethinking its values and its opinion about the agrarian reform.
Que a gente possa somar as pequenas e importantes experiências com um projeto maior, um projeto de sociedade.
And that we can use these small projects that are actually working together with every single initiative in order to achieve this goal.
E que nós podemos usar todas as ferramentas disponíveis, inclusive a comunicação.
And that we should use every single tool available in order to achieve this goal, including communication.
Ou seja, os trabalhadores, a sociedade que luta por um outro modelo de sociedade deve se comunicar.
And that people that fight for the same goals, people that fight for a change, for a model different from this one, from the one that is currently available in the world, should talk and should get together.
e o nosso agradecimento, né, por essa oportunidade e também por ver um grande público fazendo um importante debate do nosso entendimento.
And I would like to thank you for this opportunity, this event, and most of all to everyone here that is interested in this change. Thank you.
I just want to say that 1989, 85% of the Cuban agriculture was in big state enterprises. Today, there are no big enterprises, and only 15% of our cultivated land belongs to the state. All the other is in hand of cooperative or individual producers. And another experience is that we to have the support is we look always to all the programs and policies from the government and see where we can hang the agroecological model. And we say we are supporting this official program. Then they give us support for what we are doing, and we introduce a food sovereignty and agroecology in this program. That is what we are doing now in the program of empowerment of the municipalities from the government. Then what my project is supporting the official program of empowerment of the municipalities, naturally, on food sovereignty and on agriculture.
Lots of people asked about access to land here in the UK, and it is pretty poor, but there is a new organization, well, website, foodmapping.org, which does enable you at least to see what community land is available in your area. The other thing I would say is that your municipalities here or councils actually still do have a duty to provide allotments, and indeed if there was enough pressure they can even start to look at something bigger than allotments, and we've had a few examples of community farms, not enough, but I think that we have to build the pressure at that level as well, because they actually can, they used to have a duty to provide county farms, and some counties still have them. Those have been rather sold off, but there are still some. I think we need to build up from that base, whether it's allotments or farms. And there has, in the last 20 years, been too much silence about provision of that sort of land for people. We hope to turn that around, and it's improving with things like foodmapping.org, because at least that's a central resource people can start to use. And the other thing I'd like to say is thank you so much to War on Want, because you're one of the few campaigning organisations that ties these issues together about food and about employment, and I think today has been terrific. So I'd just like to say a huge thank you to you.
Thank you very much, Sue. That's very kind. I just want to just draw it together with just a couple of responses to the outstanding thoughts and questions which were in the room, one of which was, why are people not more angry about this? And partly, I do want to bring a little bit more politics into this, partly because they haven't been told of what the problem is. They constantly get images on their screen of starvation and hunger around the world that's portrayed as a tragedy rather than as a scandal. And repoliticizing it and telling people about the systemic culpability of the capitalist global system which is responsible for that is absolutely what we're trying to do and what we're trying to engage everybody in. We have been frustrated in this for many years, and at this point I think it's worth us just saying we have tried to bring forward the model of food sovereignty in this country, and it has been blocked time and again, not just by the government, but also by many of the non-governmental organisations and development agencies which would prefer to stay with the government in promoting a model of food security based on free trade and social welfare, which we completely reject. And that, I think, comes back to the next, that final question also. What should people here in the UK be campaigning on? And I think that there are good campaigns like WDN's food speculation campaign, like campaigns to stop land grabbing, like campaigns to stop the hedge funds, which are located in Mayfair, just around the corner, being able to move in to the whole food commodity speculation game. But for us, I think, it's really important for us to challenge the model. The British government in particular has sustained the most extreme form of a free trade model in food. Even when you have organisations like the FAO, the UN, pulling back a little bit because they can see how badly that model has failed, the British government has gone straight in saying we're not interested in providing money to support small-scale farming, we just want to keep on with the major corporate agribusiness players, and that's where we're going to be putting our money in the future. And that does go for fisheries as well. You know, European Union waters have been fished dry, so Europe is now going down the whole of the west coast of Africa, again destroying any possibility of food sovereignty of the fisher people down in those areas, so that the waters can be handed over to European trawlers to fish dry like they fished all these boats dry. There are other things which we try to put in the report as a vegetarian of over 20 years, bit of a questioning of why we still continue to have such an extraordinarily wasteful diet based on meat and fish, but we won't go there right at the end of the day. Instead, can I thank you all very, very much for having taken part in such a stimulating and such a wonderful day. Can I ask you to give a last final round of applause to all the speakers and everybody who's taken part, and can I also ask you to take away both the literature, the membership forms, and really to spread the word about food sovereignty, because the movement is us. So thank you very much indeed for everybody.